Rainmaker FM is brought to you by Digital Commerce Institute. Do you want to build the business of your dreams without squandering time and money, stumbling around to find the right path, or making unnecessary mistakes? The market is ready and waiting for you, but that doesn't mean it's gotten any easier. Digital Commerce Institute is here to change that. Go to digitalcommerce.com and get the training, education, and community you need to start building your digital business the right way. That's digitalcommerce.com.
This is Rainmaker.fm, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmakerplatform.com. Welcome to the Digital CMO Podcast here on the Rainmaker.fm network. I am your host, Mike Oren, and this week we've got a real treat. Old buddy of mine, Paul Monroe. Paul, welcome.
Thank you, Mike. Glad to be here.
I've known Paul for a long time back in his prior capacity as head of marketing for the Dallas Mavericks, and all of our ears here locally perked up a few weeks ago, probably about a month ago, when it was announced that Paul is now leading marketing at Texas Motor Speedway. Another arena, but a very different sport, right?
It's the opposite end of the spectrum for sure. Yes.
Coming in, what were your preconceptions about NASCAR versus the NBA, and which of them have already been shattered?
Well, I mean, it's like most of everybody when I started with the Mavs back in 05, you know, the first question somebody asks you is, you know, do you know basketball? Do you like the Mavericks? Do you follow the NBA? Of course, all those answers were yes. And then taking a job in the NASCAR field, you know, we run Indy out here as well. You know, all those questions where they'd look at you and look at me and say, yeah, do you follow NASCAR? Have you been to a race? You know, what's your knowledge of it? So at the end of the day, you're honest with them, and I've been to a handful of races. I have been to Daytona in the past, an Indy race, and a couple races out here at Texas Motor Speedway. But, you know, it is new and it is different. It's a completely different audience. It is that audience would most expect. It's an older male, an older, you know, white male, and they are bringing. NASCAR has kind of figured out they need to bring some young blood in, and from some other industry, and to see how we can expand that demographic. So it is not such an older generation, and bring a younger generation out here, because you have an audience that eventually, if they don't share that passion to that younger audience, there's going to be a big void here. So the other big difference is when you approach and you drive up, when I drive up American Airlines Center, it's like any venue out there. It's a 20,000 seat capacity facility used for NHL and hockey and basketball and third party events, circuses and ice shows and concerts, etc. But you drive up in Fort Worth, city of Fort Worth near Roanoke area, and approach a huge coliseum that seats, you know, 110,000 plus. So when you drive up to my office, it is quite a big difference. So yeah, some differences of that. And I've had a chance to get out to Daytona a couple weeks ago for the 500, a thrilling race, and got to really observe that consumer base and some, a lot of differences from the arena side of the basketball hockey arena and now into speedway sports.
You know, I was thinking when I first heard this, I was trying to think about some of the differences you'd face. And I mean, you know, NBA, you were 40 some games a year, plus playoffs, plus, you know, other special events. And I presume that, you know, you're now dealing with a much bigger hole to fill, but fewer times a year. Does that raise the stakes a bit?
Yeah, there's not, you know, with most sports, and I speak more of the basketball side, and hockey's very similar because it's the same amount. You've got about 41, you have 41 regular home season games. You have some preseason games, and then you get, obviously, get in the postseason. But with basketball, with having so many games, you can have some hiccups here or there, or you can test some things out in the preseason on a game presentation standpoint and operationally, you know, ingress and egress of traffic flow and different promotions and with sponsors, et cetera. So when you 41 and easy math, you get into three big races here at Texas Motor Speedway. You've got two weekends of NASCAR and Cup races, Xfinity and trucks and Indy. So you go from 41 down to three. So there's really no room. You really can't get out there and I want to test something or try something out. You've really got to be precision and precise, and there's no room for error. So that is a big difference of making sure you have all the time in the world. You've got much more time on the front end to be prepped and ready to go. But when lights, camera, action, you don't have room to be editing and taking it off and hey, we'll fix that for the next week, because there isn't a next week. There's a few months and you've got the next big race. So you've got to be really on your game, entertaining those fans that come on out and spend a lot of money and don't want to see a great race, but everything that surrounds that's what I am responsible for.
Right, right. Well, and it, you know, one of the things we try and do on the show is make even, you know, a particular niche like here, sports marketing, relevant to everybody who's in the marketing space. And one of the things I could see that is probably very different is, you know, with the NBA or the Mavs, you're really selling your brand. You're selling your local team, and that's what you're filling the arena with. Where it seems to me that with NASCAR, you're really selling the whole category, right? You're the venue where the drivers are coming from all over, and yeah, you may highlight some stars, but you know, you're selling the whole sport. How do you approach that problem differently?
That's a great point, and you're right. And what I've noticed out here, because I spent a few years prior to my days with the Mavericks with Feld Entertainment, which was Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus and Disney and Ice, so it was more family based. But you know, that show, those shows would come in a couple times a year, and you put a circus on in the summertime, and fans would come. When I got to the Mavs, it was more that community based, where you had a team that's a local team, so you'd see that fan support, especially the closer you get to playoffs, and the support for different players like Dirk Nowitzki, etc. And you've got that in major markets and smaller markets, whether it's minor league or it's an NBA. The hard part, what I will find out, again, I'm 5 weeks into the position here, but it isn't. You don't have that local luxury of having that home team feeling. You are dealing with athletes or drivers that come from all over. You know, we'll say the Charlotte area of North Carolina, or we have some local drivers here, but they they come in for a race. So you've got a big venue out here that we said, you know, it's active throughout the year with events and third party of events, but you've got three big race weekends, but you just don't have that hometown. We're different. They're not rooting for the Mavericks or the Cowboys or the Texas Rangers or the Dallas Stars. They're rooting for those individual drivers. So that luxury of having going to the arena and going to the dealing with a Coach Carlisle and the PR department saying, hey, I need Jason Kidd or I need Dirk to do a PA announcement on the spot, or we've got a third-party promotion or new sponsors come on board, can we get a few of the players ready to go? You're just not accessible to that. You just don't have that. And then that other piece is it's so much more vast, and now you're dealing with drivers and teams. It could be a fan of a Toyota or a Chevrolet or of a Ford. So it's something that it's going to be a big learning curve for me. And how do you get fans in that local market to support Texas Motor Speedway, that we've got one of the best tracks in America or the world? But you lose that local. You don't have, 40 drivers that are all, putting on one jersey or one helmet or one baseball hat.
Right, right. And it is one of the best tracks. And I know they had some criticism in the early days from the drivers, and they've really fixed that. And now it's a premier track to visit. Is that really part of the message? Is, hey, we've got the biggest best here, which is a very Texan thing, of course. Is that the message? Is it, you know, where we are in the standings and what's happened? You know, Daytona had such an exciting finish. Does that become part of your marketing story?
Absolutely. I mean, we have an amazing general manager out here, Eddie Gossage. He is somebody that I've known. Is probably, when you mention in the market that we live in the Metroplex Dallas Fort Worth area, you've got some very influential owners, Jerry Jones, Mark Cuban. Eddie Gossage is right up there. So between the ownership, SMI, Speedway Motorsports Incorporated, you've got a lot of folks that invest in a corporation in a speedway that invests a lot of dollars in making sure that this is a pristine facility and rivals the other tracks around the U.S., the states, and the world. But, yeah, you do rely on that. You rely on those drivers, and you rely on ownership and NASCAR and everyone to, publicity. And we have a large PR department here. To really get that word out. So when you have an exciting race like you had in Daytona 500 a couple weeks ago, or, you know, getting some comments from drivers, that excitement and coming to Texas Motor Speedway, you want to parlay the heck out of that and get that out, because that is a big piece of it. And then that second piece is you know, it's a big hat that I'm going to wear, is that experience of having that fan come out, just not for the race, but to really come out for that full experience from that Thursday to Saturday, or that full week at on. And then, you know, if you're a first-time customer or patron, or maybe you're a season ticket holder and haven't taken that full advantage of that full experience, just how to get that message across, because there is so much. And I had that luxury of being a kind of a fan in Daytona a couple weeks ago. And I'm just amazed. I can see where, you know, that audience gets hooked. And that's what we want to do, is get that younger audience and a more diverse audience out here, and older and younger, to come on out and come out to all three races, and then come out to some of the other events. I mean, there's dirt tracks, there's speed racing. There is so much more than just even a big NASCAR Cup race. You've got the Xfinity, you've got the trucks, and see the upcoming drivers, et cetera. So, yes, all of the above.
Well, yeah, and, you know, you've got the driving school out there, and there's sort of the luxury amenities working all the time. Are you responsible for the year-round marketing, or are you really just focusing on the big events?
I don't. Yes and no. I mean, so there's so many. It's such a vast facility here. It's hundreds of acres. I'll give you that exact amount sooner than later. But you've got a lot of third-party events out here. A lot of, I mean, the typical stuff. Hey, you know, a big car show, obviously, that's going to be out here. Or using a third-party track, a dirt track for maybe a truck race, or a dirt track car race, or whatever it might be, or you want to take a driver experience and actually race a NASCAR on the track, or a high performance car, or whatever. So it's always being used, but there is a big events department here. Like most facilities, when you work for the team, like I now working for Texas Motor Speedway, there's so much that goes into those three races and some of those other third-party events that, you know, you've got to be on your game and focus on that like you would be basketball. So most venues have, they have operations and marketing departments that work to help those other third parties. Again, if it's a concert coming in, or if it's a Ringling Brothers Circus coming in, they're not going to work with the team. They'll work individually with those venues. So we have a pretty expansive operations and event departments here that work on that. But on my end, and as a marketer, if I've got somebody that's a car lover that's got a car show or coming to the dirt track or what have you, by all means, you know, I should be doing my job if I'm not, you know, trying to mine that consumer that's out here and get them in our database and find a way to get them out to one of our larger experiences with one of those three races and grow their passion. If they already love cars and they're coming out to an event, or it's a one-off event that's completely separate, it could be a Red Bull racing or flying event, you know, they're out here for some type of thrill and they're out to the facility. So, you know, how great would it be to get them on board to come on out and eventually be a season ticket holder and enjoy all the events? But you've got to get them hooked. So you want to make sure this facility looks as good as it can whenever you can turn on Big Hoss, the world's largest TV,
yeah,
or get somebody inside the grandstands here, you know, that amazement. And I'm sure their mind's going, wow, what's it like when you have 110,000 fans in here and those, you know, I'm listening to maybe a few cars, but what's it like with, you know, 40 plus NASCARs all revving those engines up and going, and what's that experience like? I've got to get out here for it. And that's my job, to go out and mine and work with those departments to get that data and find ways to get those consumers out here if they haven't already.
Right. Well, and you know, you talked a bit about trying to get to the younger, the coveted millennial audience, and maybe it's because my company's part owned by a newspaper who's also a client of mine, that whole idea is something that's constantly on the brain. So, you know, what is the messaging to the young person who's never been out there before, and probably more important, aside from that, how do you get in front of them the first time? How do you get them to come out and take that taste? Do you have thoughts on that yet?
I do, and what has amazed me so far, and the NBA is great. I mean, working for the Mavs, you had a group up in New York that was with the NBA side called Teambo, and basically it's your team operations and marketing side. So they're liaisons, and they did a great job of keeping teams and working with teams with best practices, making sure that we were up to date with the most current, you know, just those relationships on the social media side, et cetera. Obviously, Twitter is very big with NBA players. So, you know, across the board in utilizing your stars and your players to amplify those messages. So there's where I really got into learning that side of it and how powerful social can be. And, you know, that is an area for that millennial, that younger generation. What do you do out here? And again, going 5 weeks on and trying to find is how does when somebody has that stigma of, you know, are you a NASCAR fan? Do you know that consumer base? And what I saw in Daytona is how do I get parents and how do I get that older consumer to bring, you know, his grandkids or bring a son or a daughter out and kind of get them to enjoy that experience. So when they come on out, they don't have to be glued down on their phones or their devices the entire time, but you have to have a social experience to that, whether it's a Snapchat or it's Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or what have you. And I go back to NASCAR is really up there cutting edge with NBA and some of the other sports properties. And they did a really nice job. If those listening, you know, watch some of the Daytona 500 in what NBC and what Fox and NASCAR and what SMI and the other sports or teams are doing in the drivers to really kind of amplify and make sure that they are interacting. Because if I do come as a millennial, I want to be glued, you know, I want to watch the sport, but I also want to have my head down, and maybe Twitter is going to give you a earlier, quicker reaction of what's going on with a particular driver. If that car spun out, you're going to find more on your mobile device than you would of maybe an 8-second delay here or there on the radio broadcast. But how do I make that more entertaining? But how do I get somebody out? How do I encourage a mom and dad or a senior to come on out and bring that youth out here and then get them on a head scanner, get them on interactive, these millennials, and even what I experience, how close you can get to the action. See, these cars and these drivers are getting more in tune on social, and being more relevant with maybe concerts and events out here that become a little bit more topical to that generation and kind of mix it up. You know, I'm, again, a basketball guy. The DJ was really popular. You had to have a DJ at a stadium. Well, you know, how do you incorporate maybe a DJ at a Speedway event? I don't know yet, but, you know, I see some music and maybe a DJ coming on board and being a little bit more in tune on that game presentation or that race presentation. So he or she was like, oh, I was at that event. I was there and I saw that. And then did you see what happened on Big Hoss, or did you see that interaction on the social media side? It's got to be more entertaining as opposed to somebody coming, sitting in their seat and just watching, you know, these great cars go around for 250 laps or so. They've got to be much, you're going to have to engage them more than you would than maybe that older consumer.
Right, and so there's going to be a push and pull, I imagine, of you want to keep the experience intact for your existing audience while giving the youth audience something that is more to their expectations. So that's a fine line.
It really is.
The Digital CMO Podcast is brought to you by Rainmaker FM, the Digital Marketing and Sales Podcast Network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm.
It's we always say your bread and butter. You've got your bread and butter. I mean, tickets are your bread and butter, and sponsorships and merchandise and food and beverage are all big parts of it. But you don't want to alienate your fan base, and your fan base has been loyal to NASCAR and to these tracks and these speedways and these drivers for years. I mean, everybody knows that's a big demographic. I mean, it has been brought up on the political mainstream. You know, it's the NASCAR fan. I mean, they can sway and important with decisions made in America around the globe. So you want to be careful that, you know, how do you get that mainstay fan to say, look, you know, and that becomes promotions. That becomes, what do you do on social? That becomes, how do you expand on that experience out here and make it more? It's got to be a little bit more. And I think all teams are trying to figure that out, from, you know, Cowboy Stadium to the Mavericks. And that was one thing that Mark Cuban really got to me. What I learned from him was, this has got to be a fun and exciting experience for all the fans. But, you know, you got to be like a wedding DJ, going back to the DJ piece of it. You got to be able to deliver to all fans. You can't just play something that's just, you just heard currently on, you know, the top 40 hits. You've got to go back and you've got to play maybe some country. You've got to play some kind of, you know, 70s rock. You've got to play, you know, something fun. You got to play something for kids that they might have heard on the Disney Channel or something kind of streamy. And then you got to, you know, keep on the urban side a little bit too. So you got to be that wedding DJ and play everything that makes everybody, you know, pop and excitable, that's going to kind of perk them up.
Yeah, you really need an EDM cover of Sweet Home Alabama as intro music or something like that.
You're right.
how to be all things to everybody. Well, you talk about the challenge of the aging audience and bringing in the young fans, but the good side of the story is, and you touched on this a bit, is that from the sponsor perspective, NASCAR is really heaven. In my seconds of research that I did before the call, I mean, I found that, you know, 40% of NASCAR fans can correctly ID the sponsor brands. 76% are likely to consider a brand that's the sponsor. I don't know anybody who sells sponsorships that wouldn't go absolutely, you know, crazy to be able to take stats like that out. So why has NASCAR been so successful in that space, and how does that translate at the local level?
Again, another great question, Mike. Again, there was a great book probably that was, I don't know, published back in the mid-90s called The NASCAR Way, that really just talked about how racing kind of developed in NASCAR and the families that started it, but really got into the sponsorship and really got into that loyalty piece of it. And you're right, it's sponsorship is key. It's key to the drivers, and it's a few things are, and I may not touch on everything again. I have learned it is a very expensive sport. You might have some families that are listening, or folks that are in racing, maybe more of an amateur side, or just getting into it. This is not. It's a lot more. If you got kids in hockey, or you in a club level, which you get a lot of that out here in the Fort Worth, Dallas market. You know, that does get expensive on the travel and the cost. But, you know, owning a Cup car, or an Xfinity car, or a truck that gets into the millions of dollars, and I've been heard some quotes that it's around 25 on average to have a car in the Cup race and the NASCAR race, you know, your big Saturday Sunday races. So, you know, you need sponsorship dollars to be able to get those cars on the track and to maintain them and upkeep. So it's like an NBA in most teams. We would spend a lot of time with those players. Players usually, you get a young kid out of college, they get on a team, they just don't get it right away. You know, there are some that do get it, but there's where the beauty of the Mavericks, of having some of those seasoned players come in, like a Jet Terry or a Dirk or Jason Kidd. You know, it wasn't their first rodeo, so they'd come in and they know the importance of the fan events, that fan experience, and coming out and you know, get the game open to introduce and say hello to the crowd and how important it was. It's 100 times more with NASCAR. I'm amazed of seeing Dale Earnhardt Jr. going out and doing meet and greets and having folks from Nationwide or whomever by his car, you know, 5 minutes literally before he's introduced. He's on a flatbed truck going around the track and then in his car. So sponsorships are key in that the drivers know it, because if they don't have them, they're not on that track and they're not bringing that experience, that excitement to the fans. And they value that in passionately with those sponsors, know how to what drives it. And then the fans, you know, they pick that driver, or they pick that car, or they pick that team, and they really get behind it. And that recall and that somebody seeing, Kyle Busch driving an M&M's car, well, I'm sure that there definitely is correlation of somebody going out and saying, I'm bringing some peanut M&M's or whatever to the race that day or what have you. So it's a unique audience. What's unique about it, too, with most speedways, I think probably about 90% of them out there, allow fans, unlike most amusement parks and other venues, to bring their own coolers in. So, you know, a fan can, you know, bring his or her cooler in, and, you know, they can stock it with M&M's or stock it with a certain beverage or whatever it is, if they want to bring Coke or Pepsi, or they want to bring a certain chip product or whatever it might be. Because and they're probably doing it because they're supporting their driver. So it is amazing to learn more. The hard part about it is, because these cars are so expensive, you know, it is a nightmare for a marketer, because you just can't take a snapshot of a car and say, okay, I like number 88. Let's kind of put that all over billboards or put that into my digital. You know, that car is always changing, because they might come to our track. The next thing they know, they're promoting, you know, a Batman Superman movie that's coming out, and the car is completely different. So, you know, or I can't use that because everything's re-upped for the next year. So Nationwide might go away, and it might be another insurance company or a food product or what have you. But those fans, they're glued on, and they're going to recall it, and they're going to know it, and they're probably going to go out. And most likely, if it's, you know, three cereal boxes, they're the one that they're going to pick, because their driver's drive is supporting it and sponsoring it and doing everything behind it, and they want to support that driver. So it is incredible.
Right. And it's moved, you know, obviously early days, like you said, STP and Richard Petty, and then, you know, consumer packaged goods followed. But I mean, really now I see a lot of touting of the Fortune 500s out there, and Microsoft has a big deal with NASCAR. So that market is changing, and really, I guess, you know, as you said, it's not cheap. So it's attractive market. Do you see that? Is that growth going to continue over the next couple of years?
I really do. I think that NASCAR might have said 20, 30 years ago. Again, some might disagree that, you know, they weren't up to speed with some of the other professional sports out there. And I think that they are, I think corporations, some might have shied away. I think they're just looking at it going, wow. You know, when I, again, at Daytona, the fan zone area, I was just blown away. It wasn't just Harley Davidson, or it wasn't just, you know, Chevy out there, or a Corvette display. It was Microsoft. It was some big. And I think folks and fans know, when you go to a fair, or you go to somewhere, or you go to a game, when you see a presentation, or you see a display or a setup, you're going to know. Hey, they spent some money to for the props and the displays and the human resources to run this, and that's not cheap. And in probably what they're paying, again, the speedway or the particular driver, what have you. So but they, in return, that company, that organization, that Fortune 500 is going to know there is a return on investment, or they wouldn't be doing it. So it isn't just your car companies or what have you. It's getting deeper into that, and you are finding financial or finding insurance or finding others that you wouldn't think. Maybe again, 10 years you thought everybody was wearing maybe a General Mills cereal logo on them. Not anymore. You'll see more of that. And I think that's because of that sophistication of it, the science of racing. It's just, again, not hopping in a car and going 250 laps. There's so much more to it. And again, these drivers at such a young age, at 18, 19, they are so well equipped, media trained, than I think any other athlete out there in the sports market worldwide. And I think that's important. That gets into that millennial scene. If they can get a young driver out there to support that product and to get behind it, they might know that that driver could be with them as well for maybe 20, 30 years, if not longer, if they have a successful, you know, experience and run at it. And it's unlike that with other sports. I mean, they might change a team or they might change a car, but for the most part, they know they'll be with them. And that's unlike that with other professional sports. It's hard to find a Brett Favre out there that's going to be there for so long and parlay that money. And you get a lot of companies out there, Fortune 500s, that are pulling away, like Adidas is now going away from NBA after this year. Well, they're probably going to start putting more of their money to the individual athletes. Because I do see that return, and that's where it is with NASCAR. I mean, you're not dealing with a bunch of teams. You are, but you're dealing well with that individual driver or that smaller group of a team of drivers.
Right, right. So you've been at this for five whole weeks now. You've got your first big race coming up here in a couple of weeks with the Duck Commander 500. I assume you're not on the hook for that one yet. So what are you going to be watching for as you go through that weekend and to gain some data points to start with your plan going forward?
Oh no! It's sports. I'm on the hook already. So it's 2 weeks. Take you to Daytona, see how a race works. You got it. You go. You know, I'm a seasoned vet. So I think I'm still drinking a little bit from the water. The fire hose has gotten a little bit smaller, but it's still going to be a learning curve to see how it works, because each speedway, each track, there are a lot of parallels. Again, if you're hockey or you're football or baseball, when you go to a game, obviously, you know, the track could be a little bit smaller. You know, I'd have 1.5 miles here as opposed to 2.5 miles in a Daytona. So each venue will be a little bit different. But for the most part, most of your pre-race activities are on the front end. So unlike other sports where you have timeouts or period breaks, you know, you've got to really get everything on the front end before that race starts. I mean, you'll have some times to get things in around a yellow flag or what have you during, you know, some breaks in between. You know, you're going to probably have a wreck here or there that's going to give you some time depending on that, but or if there's debris on the track to run something. But that's, you just got to be on your game. But everything happens at the front end, and you know, I'll be observing quite a bit. You know, my eyeballs are going to be, I'll have a lot of peripheral vision going on, and seeing of ways and watching that consumer, that fan. We have a fan council, so we have some fans that we select, so we'll be doing some Q&As and some test marketing that week of, and a lot of observance to see, you know, how fans, just that whole experience from parking to getting in, and then what, you know, how are they watching the race, what are they seeing, you know, what are those relationships that we have with our third parties, with our ad agencies, with, you know, with Panasonic, what are the content that we're putting on, what's resonating with fans, what's that chatter going on the social sites, you know, how are our announcers doing, how are the folks out in the field doing, what's the cameras look. So there's so much that, yes, I'll be soaking in and taking in, but then there are going to be some things we're already making some moves in. We've got, again, we have the world's largest TV, high-def TV in the world. You know, we're going to make sure that the content is on there, and that was key with me with the Mavs, of having great content during a period break or a timeout. We wanted those fans, we didn't want their heads down in their phones. We called it an HD fan, a head down. We wanted them, you know, watching the court, watching, looking at those stats and seeing, you know, what fun content we had on the video screen. You know, here's the same thing. So I'm already had media day and already working on some great content that we can present on the Big Hoss, world's largest TV.
Well, yeah, there's no point in having Big Hoss if you don't have great content on it.
Absolutely. And again, that's one of the reasons why I'm here, because again, I learned from some of the best through my years at Feld Entertainment and the Dallas Mavericks, and, you know, bringing that in a unique way, taking some of that, but knowing how important it was of having a great show and having great product and content on a video board, especially, again, the world's largest. I mean, it's foolish you shouldn't be here if you don't know what to put on that screen. So we've got a great team and a lot of great folks that are seasoned that have been here, and some that just kind of need to break out a little bit more and kind of expand their, explore and share their talents and put it on there. So I'm real excited. And it was fun racing. It was fun on our media day. All that stuff was done down in Daytona. And the drivers have such a great sense of humor. They're fun. And that's what you want. You want to have, I mean, you're out here to get away. I mean, you want to see a serious race, but then you also want to, you want to kind of see these drivers, you know, they want to be humanized a little bit and have some fun with them. So that's what I'm all about. Again, I said fun and a great experience. And that was something that I learned from the Mavs on a game presentation standpoint.
Absolutely. Well, I got to tell you, I really appreciate you doing this so close into your first big race. So I will let you go here in a second, but we have one final question that we ask every guest, and it's helping us kind of build the show. Who are two really smart marketers, you know, that we should have on the show?
Well, I would say Eddie Gossage and Mark Cuban. I'm sure those are probably two common ones, but I would say, you know, some of those seniors. I also think it kind of felt I've worked with some of the, you know, they're at the top, but they are marketers and salesmen. So, and those are the two key points. I always kind of tell folks, you know, you can learn marketing, but if you don't know sales, then you shouldn't be in the marketing business. So all three of those gentlemen, and I'll help you with that, is to get some of the teachers that I have learned from and now starting to learn from on Eddie's end, but Mark and Kenneth Feld on the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey and what he's been able to do. And he's gotten a lot in the news with the Asian Elephants now coming off the tour with the circus. And, you know, how are they going to reinvent themselves? They won't. They've got great product, but you're going to see, you know, one of their largest assets. You know, they're taking the main roller coaster out of the amusement park, and they're going to have to park it and fill that void. So what is that? So, and he'll have something up his sleeve. You look at Mark. He's got a team. They're not back at that championship caliber, but they will get there. And he's already got a promotion going. We're allowing fans to design the next court for next season, which is awesome. I mean,
That's
he did
great.
A jersey a couple years ago when I was with him, and now he's letting a fan, you know, a winning fan, design the actual court that will be on the floor for however many seasons. But I would assume it's for the 16-17 season.
Right.
And then Eddie Gossage, that has been a genius in the racing world and a great ambassador of all sorts of racing, including all the Cup stuff and bringing this great track to the Dallas-Fort Worth market.
Yeah, so one, I'm going to definitely take you up on any help in getting those folks there. And you're right, with the Mavericks, Donnie Nelson came in and talked to my staff last week. We do as kind of an education thing, and it just always blows my mind how many things are going on there. And it also made me chuckle. It was kind of a reverie when you brought up the court design contest. I don't know if you remember this. The way you and I met was the crazy idea we had at Pegasus News to do the song contest for the official playoff song back in probably, I'm going to say it was
the champion 05 season. Yeah, it was 2005-06. Yeah.
So
yes.
you've upped the game. You've gone from a song to the court. That's pretty cool.
You know, with Mark, he was one of those. I'd get up in the morning, I'm brushing my teeth, and I've got the local news on. Next thing I see, Mark on, and he's got something up his sleeve. And you know, he just, if it just came, and he worked so well, geniusly with the media. You know, sometimes the media, he was quicker getting it out on the airwaves, and then we'd find out later, and we'd make it happen. So that's the world of sports. You know, you get in, and they give you a couple days or a few weeks to get it, but you know, you make it happen, and the goal is to bring consumers in. And the old term is butts and seats, but you know, it's a lot different than that. You want to have a great experience, and you want that fan to have a good time. But you don't want them in the seat. You want them out of their seat, standing up and cheering and taking in the full experience. So, Mike, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. I'll help you try to get some of these heavy hitters on, and I'll love to come back once I get maybe a year under my belt.
That sounds great. We'll find out how the first year went. So thanks again, Paul, for doing this. Again, this is the Digital CMO podcast on the Rainmaker.fm network, and we really, really appreciate you coming on and doing this, especially on short notice.
Thanks, buddy. Have a good one.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.